I'm Frank Vaughn. It is April 5th, 2026, Easter Sunday. May the Father of Christ bless you as you observe this holiday. I have family at the house. My in-laws are here. But I couldn't help take the opportunity to film because this might be the final day before the world changes irrevocably, forever. If it hasn't already, I think things will be very different come tomorrow morning. First thing I want to ask is, who wore it better? This isn't really a joke because the message that the seemingly deranged occupant of the White House, and if that offends you, please just stay tuned. Watch this report. I'm trying to warn you about what's happening and what's going to come. The deranged occupant of the White House messaged this morning. Tuesday will be power plant day and bridge day. At the Nuremberg trials, many Nazis, not all of them, because the United States worked tirelessly to save them, not just through Operation Paperclip, but the vast majority of people that were convicted at Nuremberg were out by the mid-1950s, and they were working in the West German government. But that's history. Nobody seems to give a damn about history. Nobody cares about Mosaddegh. Nobody cares about how bad the Shah was. You got a lot of 30-year-old expat Iranians talking about how great the monarchy was, but none of them have ever read a history book about Iran and understand that the Iranian Revolution was an answer to tyranny and may have become tyranny as well, but was very popular at the time it happened. But again, who cares about history? This is what Donald Trump had to say. Tuesday will be power plant day and bridge day, all wrapped up in one in Iran, bragging about war crimes to be committed. There will be nothing like it. Open the fucking strait, you crazy bastards, or you'll be living in hell. Just watch. Praise be to Allah on this Easter Sunday. The president also, in a post from around the same time, talks again about having rescued the seriously wounded and really brave F-15 crew member and officer. These soldiers are brave, especially these Marines, who I think are going to get sent into a turkey shoot because of the lack of strategic planning at the Pentagon. They don't have enough forces in the region to project force into Iran or to hold anything, but I think they're going to try anyway. And that's a scary thought, but what's lost in his post is that if they hadn't have started this war of aggression, which is what it is, there's nothing defensive about it at all. People hung in Nuremberg for doing these kinds of things. And I think there's a real chance that over the course of the next year, many of the people in this administration are going to face the equivalent of a jury, not just of public opinion, but of Congress and the Senate for the disaster that this war is becoming. So he's flexing about the rescue of this pilot and ignoring the fact that the pilot shouldn't even have been there in the first place. Meanwhile, I haven't even updated this list yet. These are the assets that were destroyed or damaged or squawking emergency signals. That's what Squawk 7700 means. Just in one day. The idea that the Americans have air supremacy has been completely dispelled, except among the most hardcore Trump cult syndrome sufferers. And you need to understand that this is the destruction. Now, I know they're claiming that special forces destroyed their own assets, but there's no reason to accept that at face value because the administration has demonstrably and provably lied about much already. And so they lost two transport planes and two Blackhawks. Even if they destroyed them themselves, this is hardly a success. This demonstrates that the Iranians have sufficient defensive capabilities left. Now, if I could foresee that what Iran was doing strategically was holding back their assets to allow the United States and the Israelis to expend their force as much as possible above ground while they held back their best stuff. Because remember, and I don't know if this point is lost on some of the audience, but what the United States and the Israelis have been using are standoff munitions, which means they get close to Iran and they fire, but they don't exactly have full air supremacy over the airspace of Iran. Because whenever they try to exert it at closer range, they get shot down. This should be clear to everybody as they lose plane. Now, Iran claims that they use new missile defense system to shoot down F-15 fighter jet. Iran boasted Saturday that a new air defense system credited with shooting down two U.S. planes will allow it to definitely achieve full control over its airspace as American and Israel forces continued to hammer the country. I don't know why anybody would doubt at this point, considering that we've been told the Iranians have no ballistic missile capacity left at all, as they keep raining ballistic missiles down across the region, that they have no drone-making capacity left as they continue to fire drones. We can see the truth of our eyes, and the American administration is asking us to disbelieve our eyes and just believe their words. It is reasonable, entirely reasonable, to assume that the Iranians are just waiting. Remember, I posited, probably a month ago now, that the Iranians constitute a guerrilla army with a nation state. They're going to fight this thing as a guerrilla army, decentralized. They don't need central command to function. They're fighting a war. From their perspective, it's an existential war, which means it's a fight for their existence, which means that death is irrelevant because they feel they're going to die anyway. They have high technological capacity, and they're fighting in some of the most challenging terrain that's ever been presented to any army, invading army, in world history. This is Persia. And you can expect to see more of this, more disaster, more losses. Remember how it was said on this channel that the Iranians have had 20 years to implement a plan to defeat the United States. The U.S. military doctrine has not really expanded or upgraded in the last 20 years. The Iranians watched the war in Iraq. They participated in it through proxies. They're still participating through their proxies in Iraq today, which, by the way, the Iranians granted the Iraqi government exemption. They can now pass the Strait of Hormuz, something I don't have an article up about. The French have gotten transports through the Strait of Hormuz. The Japanese. The world is bypassing the United States to negotiate directly with the Iranians. This is a loss of power and prestige for the United States. And in spite of all of Trump's rhetoric about it being easy to open the strait, they can't do it. And they know they can't do it. They're just giving red meat to their base. They're lying, essentially, and they're gaslighting. Here's an article in the New York Times. You can attack the source all you want. The information's accurate. Iran is quickly repairing missile bunkers, U.S. intelligence. Not the New York Times. U.S. intelligence says, reports cast doubt on how close the United States is to destroying Iran's missile capability. The key goal in the war. The Americans, the U.S. administration, I should say, is constantly telling you that Iran is combat ineffective. And yet they lost close to a dozen airplanes in the last 48 hours, or air assets. Ballistic missiles are still being fired. We know that it's a lie, because we can see with the evidence of our eyes, and they've planned for this. And I'm going to show you a graphic. This has been sitting on my desktop for a couple of days, and I've been meaning to show you this entire time, but this is the kind of thing that the Iranians have done all across their country. Yazd's granite fortress, most people don't even know what Yazd means or where it is. Why destroying Iran's missile metro is practically impossible, because it's buried under a half kilometer of granite. Not even nukes can reach it. And they have all of the assets stored deep inside these mountain fortresses to make sure that whenever you bomb the entrances, they can get back up and operating within hours. Again, this is not, as the idiot in yesterday's video, one idiot of many idiots that have highlighted who claims that these are just all goat sodomizers, don't seem to understand that the Persians are a highly technologically advanced civilization. They have a functional constitutional theocracy, whether you like it or not, and they have a plan. And they're patiently executing that plan under withering American bombardment. They know what they're doing. This is unstoppable. And it's especially unstoppable when you realize the Iranians look at it as a war of existence. There are people on social media, don't recall if I showed them yesterday. Actually, I did. I know I did. I showed the guy that said, turn them all to glass. Kill all 90 million of them. Women, children, everybody. As impossible as that would be. And the thing that kills me is the engagement. Tens of thousands of people are like, yeah, turn it to glass. You don't realize you're driving the nail in the coffin of America First and MAGA. And some of us out here who care are trying to warn you. U.S. intelligence said to assess around half of Iran's missile launchers are still intact. Israel, a team player on Iran, will stop when I stop, Trump tells Time. He's delusional. Every time there's somebody that appears to be talking to the United States, which they gutted the State Department, their diplomatic ability has been diminished under this regime. As Hegseth, or as many military commentators call him, Hegsdeth, is talking about no quarter, which is itself a war crime, is talking about the shackles being lifted off the American military to make it more lethal, more destructive. All of these big sounding destructive, I would say satanic words. Whenever there is some kind of diplomatic potential, the Israelis kill whoever is doing the talking, because Israel is not a team player. Israel wants to make sure that the United States can't get out of the war. Israel needs American blood, American manpower to go into Iran and attempt to do the job that they can't do themselves. They're having a hard enough time in Lebanon right now. Apparently, they've reached the Litani River. They've expelled 1.5 million Lebanese from their homes and sent them north so that they can sleep on the street. And I've read people who should know better saying that that is somehow humanitarian, as bombs are falling on these families as they flee. I'm a decent human being. I can't shrug my shoulders. I have to face the look in my children's eyes. And I just can't shrug off the pain and suffering of innocent people as the Americans and are off to fighting this war to help Israeli expansionism. It's not defense. It's expansion. It's imperialism. It is a naked war of aggression about territorial expansion and control, about breaking and killing and maiming in the name of securing a future for one particular state. In the shadow of war, reads the headline, this from Human Rights Watch, settler violence against Palestinians intensifies. Look at how millions of people are left to live. What did they do? What did the women and what did the children do? How can you shrug your shoulders? How can you back American blood? I mean, it started with the leveling of Gaza, but it has gone so far beyond that now to the point where the occupant of the White House is cursing and swearing and bragging about bombing power plants and water facilities to make 90 million Iranians suffer when they're already in an existential war. Making them suffer more will not make them capitulate. They're not going to surrender. You can't do this from the air. Bombs away at LeMay, and all the experience that the United States should have gained when it comes to how to craft their war doctrine, they should have learned a long time ago that you can't win wars from the air. But they're trying anyway. This is Israel's settlement expansion drives mass displacement in West Bank. So you have to picture this. These people are living on their land, just going about their business. You can talk about violence in Gaza and Hamas all you want. Hamas does not run the West Bank. It's a completely different political entity. Largely, it has been peaceable in the West Bank for a long time because they're surrounded by walls. Effectively, the Palestinians are all cut off from each other. And then these Israeli settlers, the most hardcore of Zionists, roll up in their vehicles, beat everybody down, kick them off their land, set up their little tents, and occupy it and start more settlements. Heartless, deranged, evil is what they are. There's no safety anymore. Palestinians warn of expanding West Bank settler violence. This assault wasn't just meant to burn the houses, but also to kill. To kill women and children, says Barhan Omar, standing in the charred ruins of his family's large villa, which Israeli settlers attacked on Sunday. This is under the radar. Well, we're talking about Ukraine. We're talking about war. We're talking about Lebanon. There's so many things to talk about. While we're talking about Gaza, people on the West Bank who are doing nothing violent. First off, the Israelis are shooting missiles down over top of their territory, so they're getting debris. The consequence, the counterattack from Iran, the defense of Iran. Iran is being defensive in these, and you can... I'm not going to sit here and pretend that Iran is not killing civilians as well. But the lion's share of violence against innocents is occurring in Iran as they fight for their survival from their perspective. mapping 1,800 Israeli settler attacks in the West Bank since October of 2023. What is wrong with people that they ignore this? We're not on the right side of history. The Israeli government and these settlers, this is evil. These are evil people doing evil things to innocent, unarmed people. And you know, I regret that for the longest time when I rebooted this channel, I wanted to avoid talking about this subject. I feel so much better now, even as my audience, some of my audience leaves and get angry and I'm fighting the algorithm and all the things I talked about yesterday, I feel better. I've pretty much lost all of my Jewish friends. They're all gone. And it's incredible to me how capable these people are of turning on me because I call out violence that's being done to completely, perfectly innocent people who never did anything to anybody. That I actually care about women and children. That I actually care about human rights, that they would turn on me. You were never my friend. I never knew you. The supporters of this war of aggression are not on the right side of history. And I'm happy to say that. At least I can live with myself. I can burn the entire channel down. I can burn my social media effort down. I will not be subject to audience capture. If you're resistant to the truth, you're not here. Like, you don't belong here. Believe it. On screen, U.S. satellite firm Planet Labs announces blackout on war on Iran. Images company says move amid U.S.-Israeli war on Iran comes after request from the U.S. government. So Planet Labs delayed. I covered this on the channel before. They delayed releasing their satellite images. Well, right here it says the restriction expands upon a 14-day delay on imagery of the Middle East that Planet Labs implemented last month, which extended an initial 96-hour delay, a move the firm said was meant to prevent adversaries from using the imagery to attack U.S. and its allies. What a bunch of bullshit that is. Everybody has access to the same satellite data. Do you believe that the Chinese and the Russians are not sharing up-to-date satellite information with the Iranians? Planet Labs is not doing any favors here. This is a cover. The reason Planet Labs is not allowing satellite imagery to be released to the public is because they have to hide the vast scale of damage that's being done to U.S. and Israeli forces in the region. The war is not going as planned, and so the politicians, these liars in the White House, have to hide it from you. And so they reached out to Planet Labs and said, probably didn't ask. They probably said, you're going to do this, and if you don't, we'll make you. It'll be better for you in the long term. It'll be better for your contract prospects. It'll be better for your bottom line if you just cooperate voluntarily, which Planet Labs has. This is a disaster. I told you it was going to be a disaster. I told you before the war started that any effort to invade Iran would be futile. That's why for 10 years, the promise of Donald Trump to keep America out of this war was the only game in town. But here we are. The real threat from Iran, headline on screen. War hits farmers, not fuel pumps. Prices for retail diesel and gas have each risen by over a third since the launch of Epic Fury. Americans learned in the 1970s that Middle East conflict means energy pain. Trump can say all he wants about the United States having all the oil it needs. It's still subject to global pricing. And that's why you're paying more. But this is going to affect the rest of the world so much more. And I know there's a lot of people who don't care. As long as it's brown skins that are dying, there's a lot of people online and on social media who support the regime who don't seem to care. I still care. I can't help myself but care. There's a famine coming. It's already too late. It's April 5th. There's a famine coming. It's going to kill millions and millions of innocent people. And it's a direct result of this war of aggression. Czech government caps fuel prices and cuts diesel tax to combat surging costs at the pump. Price controls never work out long term, but you're seeing governments all over the world implement them in an effort to ration diminishing supplies. This is something every single minute of every single day, the fuel crisis ticks by. And then tomorrow markets, I believe it's tomorrow. I don't think markets are closed tomorrow for Easter Monday. I don't think it's an official holiday. Could be wrong on that. Markets are going to open. My guess is oil's going to gap big time, especially considering the 48-hour timeline to bomb the power plants and bomb the petrochemical facilities, which will invite a response from Iran to do the same to the region. Even though, before I continue with this theme, Kuwait desalinization plant oil refinery hit by missile and drone strikes. Meanwhile, in UAE, 12 people were injured by debris fall and Oracle and Amazon Web Services data centers were hit. This is an article from the 3rd of April. And it's interesting. Again, I say, I follow a lot of Al Jazeera right now because Qatar is subject to these Iranian attacks. And even though Al Jazeera is known for being biased against Israel or being biased against the United States, now that they are essentially at war with Israel and the United States adversary in Iran, they become one of the more balanced sources to follow. See, things change. Nothing remains the same. You have to be able to adapt. And the interesting thing is what they leave out. Iran has denied any involvement in these strikes. Now, it's not to say, like, Iran during this war has claimed responsibility for every single thing they've been responsible for. But they denied they fired missiles at Diego Garcia. And you're not hearing about that anymore because it probably wasn't them who did it. In addition to the Israelis killing anybody that wants to do diplomacy, I believe firmly that they are engaged in false flag attacks. I mean, they have a history of it. Look at the USS Liberty. That's a known example that everybody just shrugs off. The Israelis are known bad actors. You know, it's known now, it's acknowledged. At the time when I talked about it, people called me crazy that they were involved, that Mossad and the CIA were involved in fomenting the student protests. But the other part of it that I haven't really explored, which you can explore yourself, is that they may be have been involved in the shooting of those students to create the public spectacle to try and justify this war. This is the kind of stuff that these intelligence operations get up to. And if you think that's some kind of conspiracy theory, remember, Epstein was their guy. He was the Mossad CIA guy operating a honeypot so that they could blackmail world leaders into promoting their agenda. And to this day, no one's been charged, and they won't be. Trump fired Pam Bondi. The guy who came in said, it's over. You're not going to get any more. Anything that's been released has been released. He as much as denied that there's anybody involved, that there's no people who actually slept with the underage girls, that Epstein's billions must have came by some legal process, that he wasn't actually trafficking in minors. Again, we're being gaslit. And some would say it's because Trump is guilty, that he did those things too. I'm not so sure. I think Trump is protecting the deep state. I think he's protecting the intelligence community. People pretzel logic this. I keep seeing comments and tweets and their content. I can tell you the exact YouTube channels, whether they're watching 2CTV or they're watching Promethean Updates. Based on the talking points that they repeat like lemmings, I can tell you who they're watching. And those channels ignore the totality of the facts and pick selective facts that are at least in part true to hide the bigger truth, which is the tail is wagging the dog. The Israelis are running the United States war effort. But back to this. Here's another headline. Global plastics supply chains further pressured as Abu Dhabi petrochemicals plant suspended after attack, declaring force majeure. These are the impending supply chain disruption. We've talked fertilizer, we've talked oil, plastics, pharmaceuticals, you name it. There's problems. I got people in my immediate sphere who cannot get medication. They're waiting months just to get started on medication. They don't know why. They're so blissfully unaware they can barely point to Iran on a map. People are not waking up to this disaster and the fact that there's this concept that North America is going to be entirely insulated from the effects of this. It's not true, and I'm trying to warn you ahead of time. I need to say a word about the loss of prestige and power that the United States is suffering every single day that this war goes on. It's sad to me because the United States had the ability before this war began to reorganize the empire and maintain a massive amount of power in the world while making North America strong for everybody and rebuilding it to be the glorious shining city on the hill that it should be. We have all the resources we could ever need. We have all the manpower we could ever need. We have a whole world to ourselves over here, and we wouldn't have to be strictly isolationist. we could fortify and still trade and let the world worry about its problems while we just prospered over here. That all goes away with this Iranian war effort. On screen from the Hill, world leaders bypass Trump to tackle the Strait of Hormuz crisis. When the United States is being cut out of negotiations, that means the world is cutting the United States out from decision-making processes. Who wins? China. China set to suffer from turmoil in the Middle East, but it stands to benefit long-term. China has responded to the joint U.S.-Israeli attacks on Iran with strong diplomatic condemnation, but in essence, they're just sitting back and watching. Every day that passes strengthens their hand, while the U.S. hand is weakened. This from the prospect. The Iran war could benefit China. Beijing would prefer peace in the Gulf, but the war may bring it some advantages, especially if at a late stage. After the United States decides to commit ground troops, after they lose more planes and they lose more forces, and it becomes apparent to everybody the damage. Once they hit those power plants, once they hit those petrochemical processing facilities and oil production, and the Iranians hit back and they cause this massive amount of destruction, when the hand is completely down and the weakness revealed, the Chinese can step in and they can be mediators. They can reopen the strait and they can strengthen their hand as a result. This from the South China Morning Post. China always ends up winning when the United States goes to war. Iran may prove another costly mistake for Washington as its global standing sinks even further. You can draw parallels between America's position right now and the British position 120 years ago, and how a series of conflicts and defeats destroyed the British Empire in the world. And I mean, you can draw these parallels, as I said yesterday. You can go all the way back to Rome and even further. There was a time when the Roman Empire was the strongest military and the strongest political organization the world has ever seen. And it's gone now. And just about every empire that could ever make a claim to that title does not exist anymore. We're acting like we're in the age of eternal empire, of universalism that will go on forever. If you don't manage your universalism, and the universal hegemonic moment was gone a long time ago. It ended 25 years ago. We're adjusting to a multipolar world. I've talked about this on the channel. I don't know how people can't understand how I've arrived at this destination. These conclusions, these things that I'm presenting to you, having watched the last year of my work, where I spell out very clearly the multipolar order is destined. If you resist it, the world will sunder. This from the Sunday Guardian, never interrupt your enemy, how China may quietly gain strategic ground as U.S. remains locked in prolonged Iran conflict. I'm belaboring this point because on American 24-hour news, on the Fox News homepage, you're seeing the same looped video. This is how you know you're being programmed by everybody. The same looped video of American munitions hitting targets in Iran. It's very superficial. It's very visual. They're not telling you the other side of the story. Readers might understand this if they know where to look. Here is the Peterson Institute for International Economics, how Russia and China are winning the war in Iran, even though they're not directly participating. The power of their enemy, their strategic rival, is diminishing every day it continues. Another angle that I don't necessarily agree with, but I'm going to give it some lip service anyway. The Iran war could end up helping China's economy despite the short-term pain. This is talking about how they will roll out energy infrastructure that is less dependent on oil and more dependent on green sources. Major U.S. shale producer to boost output, and it suggests this one thing. This is a bit of a different segue. Last month, roughly 3 weeks into the U.S.-Iran conflict, UBS chief economist Arend Kapchan told clients that one reason this Middle East energy shock is not like the 2011-2014 shale boom is the lack of a comparable response from the U.S. shale patch. In other words, the oil shock was viewed as temporary by major shale players and not worth adding new drilling rigs to the mix. But now on day 35 of the 24 to 48 hour war, that assumption about a less responsive U.S. shale patch in the face of soaring energy prices looks increasingly stale. President Trump's remarks earlier this week were viewed by some analysts as less of a de-escalation. Trump said, "We're going to hit them extremely hard over the next 2 to 3 weeks. We're going to bring them back to the Stone Age." Since Kapchan's mid-March note, Wall Street has also started to reprice the duration of the energy shock. I would argue and I think it's obvious, that if the United States hits them as hard as they're saying, they knock out the energy infrastructure and the Iranians strike back, long-term, higher oil prices are baked in probably for years to come, which will mean U.S. shale is much more viable and valuable. Even if the compliance of the Venezuelans continues, the world is going to need more oil supply, and specifically North America is going to need new oil supply. And the adjustment from globally priced oil to regionally priced oil will take a transition period. Trump's right when he says North America has lots of oil. They don't need the world's oil. But oil is still priced globally. Until the world breaks up into these multipolar units and there's different pricing schemes. So in Asia, oil is priced in yuan. In North America, it's priced in US dollars or maybe something else. Good or bad, that's a whole other rabbit hole we can go down. Until that adjustment is made, high oil prices are baked in for all, including the United States and Canada. I don't believe supply shortages are going to happen here in Canada, especially in Saskatchewan or in Alberta or some of these low population oil producing places, but higher prices may occur and shortages will occur in other places. And there's a rumor out there, and it's an unsubstantiated rumor, so I'm going to speculate on it, but there's this idea that the North Koreans might be sharing intercontinental ballistic missile technology with the Iranians, perhaps the capacity to hit the United States. I don't know how viable that is, but can you imagine what would happen if such a strike were to occur, even if they landed a handful of missiles on the U.S. mainland, what that would do? I don't think we're there yet, but it's not outside the realm of possibility as we move forward through time. Now, I just want to go through some articles so that maybe we can start the week fresh. Gunfire Exchange and Daring Special Ops Raid. This is the rescue raid for that downed pilot. We don't know how many were injured. We know that two Blackhawks were lost and two transport aircraft were lost in the operation. We know that it was described as dicey by those that were there, and we know that there was an extended firefight. How many U.S. soldiers sustained injuries? How many might have died? We don't know because the Pentagon has been lying to us about casualty figures. DOJ is done releasing Epstein files. This is the guy that replaces Bondi for now, and he said it's done. New acting AG Todd Blanche declares that full release is complete, even as millions of pages remain unreleased. Why are they protecting one of the most heinous criminals in modern history? This is the Trump administration that campaigned on giving us truth on this, and they're actively covering it up, and they've been doing so the entire time. These signs should trouble people. I wanted to show this. This is footage of the wreckage from the rescue operation that the American military has gotten out and said, we did this to ourselves. We blew it up ourselves. I don't know how true that is. We have no reason to believe them because they've been caught in lies. Here's a list. A-10 Warthog destroyed. An MH-6 Little Bird destroyed, two C-130 Hercules, two Blackhawks, an F-16 damaged, $200 million destroyed while rescuing a single pilot. They're hiding the casualties. Let's give this man a hearing.
Iran is undeterred, and China is more powerful. Russia is richer. NATO is weaker, and Americans are less safe and more isolated. This has been Operation Epic Failure, and this president owns it in entirety. There have been presidents in the past, John, that have started wars that they've had to hand off to their successors. There have been presidents in the past that have had to end ingloriously wars that were not working. But Donald Trump is going to be the only president in American history to single-handedly start and lose a war.
I don't have to like the left. I don't have to like the leftist alternative media. We don't have to agree on everything. The right, this is an American disaster of huge scale that I think this week is about to get entirely worse. I've been right, and this isn't just about me. There's many other people, and I'm going to finish this video with one of the most important voices I think that's talking about this right now. I've been right about the vast majority of things that I've tried to warn you about before this war got undertaken. So I'm trying to forewarn you now, God's forfend, that what I think is about to happen actually happens. The biggest disaster in modern American history. Haig says wartime firing of top general stuns official. It's insane in the middle of the war to remove people. Likely because they understand how bad this is, how strategically untenable this entire operation is. And instead of listening to the people who know, they're getting axed and they're getting fired. At the same time, Trump weighs more cabinet changes, but wants to avoid massive shakeup. There's dissension in the ranks. That's what this tells us. Actions speak louder than words. They can put up a united front. Pam Bondi can write X posts where she praises the president. But you can see from actions that all is not well in the administration. This is an interesting one, too. Trump says with more time, U.S. can take the oil in Iran. Is the war going to be over? Remember, they were said, no ground troops. To take the oil, you have to have ground troops. To occupy Iran, you have to have a large military presence. With time, we can take the oil. So what is it? Is the war going to wrap up in 2 or 3 weeks? Or are they going to occupy it and seize the oil? You can't have it both ways. But the Trump cult syndrome people occupy, in their minds, so many polar opposite positions, and I'm trying to beg them, come back to reality. Wake up to realize that all of the counterintuitive goals and war goals and statements that daily come out of the administration cannot all be true at the same time. Exclusive from the Wall Street Journal, Iranian strikes on the U.S. embassy caused more damage than disclosed. Two drones hit the Saudi compound, sparking a fire that raged for hours. This is, again, when the damage occurs, it's downplayed. When an F-35 gets damaged and shot, they say it was friendly fire incident, or it was a mechanical malfunction, or in the case of the USS Ford, Navy's top officer admits Ford carrier fire halted its combat sorties for 2 days. It's supposed to be laundry lint that damaged this carrier and took it out of service for at least a period of time. Now, it's out of port now, and they say it's going back into action, but can we believe that? Did they just move it out of port to save face, or is it actually going to be doing combat sorties? How do we know when so much that's being said is proven false, often within hours? This isn't me saying it. It is what it is. How can we trust anything? I wish we could. I want to show you another clip. This is another reason why I'm watching Al Jazeera right now. It's not because I believe that Al Jazeera isn't gaslighting me. It's how they're gaslighting me that makes me pay attention. Watch this. Drone video shows factory damaged by Israel by Iranian debris. Israel damaged by Iranian missile debris. This is what they call debris damage, folks. And look at how much they've cleared and bulldozed already. Does this look like debris to you? It's always debris. It's always successful interceptions. But again, my eyes are doing less lying to me than the people who are feeding me the story. And for those of you who say that I just don't have the military experience to speak on these matters, even though you'll listen to me, even though I have no political pedigree, you'll listen to me talk about political analysis all day. This is a channel called Daniel Davis Deep Dive. I encourage everybody to watch it. These are military specialists. These are people, these are veterans. They know what they're talking about. And I'm going to play this on 1.5x speed to try and keep this video under an hour. You can slow it down manually in YouTube if it's going too fast for you, but this is a really powerful piece. We're just going to play a bunch of it, and we're going to watch it together because the message is really important and you need to hear it. Please listen.
We don't have control over the sky. See, we did everything long distance. And we're out of cruise missiles. We're out of the joint standoff weapons. Now we have to go in. And as we go in, we find out that the Iranian air defense is very much active. They're shooting down our drones. They hit an F-35. They're causing other planes to break off. We don't have control of the skies that he's implying. We don't know what we're bombing. He has no clue what he's talking about. He's sitting there playing a peacetime war game in his head, forgetting that the people who are executing this war plan, there is no war plan. Everything we're doing today was not pre-planned, ladies and gentlemen. There is no war plan. We are making it up as we go along. So, Mackenzie, go to hell. Really. No one should put that man on TV anymore, because what good is he? He's not telling the truth. He's implying that this is a plan. There is no plan, McKenzie, and you know there is no plan, because the plan you executed, which I know intimately, didn't involve us waiting 3 weeks to start putting forces in. We would have gone in on day one, blowing the crap out of the shore defenses, pushing in, seizing territory, pushing in further. But you know, you don't take a Mew and push in too far. If you know anything about Marine expeditionary units, the first Mew will come in and seize the initial objective. Then another one has to come in behind it. But normally you have to park two more. So you need three, that's a brigade. You need another brigade to come in and push more inland. So now you're talking about a division's worth of troops. We don't have that. We have two Mews. You think they're going to do what? Push in? They're not pushing in. They're going to die. And what, you're going to bring in paratroopers? God bless the airborne. But you know what? They'll just jump in and die. Think Arnhem. Think 1st British Airborne Division. That's what will happen to any paratrooper going. Rangers, they will die. Delta Force, let me guys give you just a little brief secret about Delta Force and Desert Storm. They were put into Western Iraq. Every single insertion was detected as it happened. They were compromised. They didn't spend, this wasn't Delta Force stealthing around. They were running for their lives from day one. They ran, they were running, fleeing. Brave guys, I'm not putting them down. But to think that we're sitting there, you're gonna go into Iran and we're gonna control anything, we will control nothing. Nothing, because there's no plan. What makes a military unit professional isn't just the training of the troops and the quality of the leadership, it's the quality of the plan. And the plan involves logistics and a whole bunch of other stuff. It just isn't happening. We are literally making it up as we go along. There is no plan, and McKenzie knows it. McKenzie should understand. There is no plan.
Here's the interesting part. So you have just very cogently and passionately laid out what is necessary if there was a plan, and what you, if you were going to make effective use of ground troops, you would have to have all those things, numbers, you would have to have training and logistics and a plan to go along with it. If you had that, then you could say that could potentially provide some leverage for negotiations and for diplomacy, as it turns out. Well, our former chief diplomat, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, apparently doesn't know any of the things you just said, because here he was talking about how just the presence of physical boots somehow magically gives diplomacy a chance.
But you also move them, therefore, security troops safe that are in the region. So there's lots of radar systems, counter-air systems that are being moved into place as well. You do move it there for a purpose of leverage and negotiation. Mr. Witkoff's position is much stronger when there's a bunch of Marines sitting on your doorstep. This is not time to pull back. They still have systems. You can see they're still able to fire rockets, missiles, not only from the Houthis and from Hezbollah in Lebanon, but directly from Iran, threatening our allies in the region, the Gulf states, the Emirates. We need to take down this system entirely.
I'm sorry, I about lost it there, because Gary had a new warning system for Pompeo, which was perfectly self-appropriate for what in the world he said there. Because he's saying that last part there, that we have to take down the system entirely. And as you just said, you would need at least a brigade, three separate Mews to take even one piece of terrain. And he's talking about taking down the whole system. I mean, literally, what in the hell is going on with the senior echelon of our country intellectually?
We've been imbued with arrogance and ignorance. It's a horrible combination. Because the ignorant, arrogant, you get people like Pompeo. Again, Americans, understand. We're the best when we, A, have a just cause. I mean, we sort of need a just cause to be anything else in that. Like right now, even if we were military proficient, which we're not, this isn't a just cause. You know, this would be the equivalent of cheering on the Nazis. Yes, I said that, because we are committing a war of aggression. That's the same crime that the Nazis were hung by the deck after Nuremberg. We're committing the same crime, the exact same crime. But, you know, you have to have military proficiency here. You have to have Marines sitting on a ship, unable to project power forward. Nobody's scared. You think the Iranians are scared of 4,000 Marines? They're not scared. I mean, the Iranians just say, please bring them. Because 4,000 Marines, no matter how well trained they are, have zero combat capacity when it comes to meaningfully affecting the outcome of this battle. None. They'll just all die. It would take us 900,000 to 1.2 million troops to physically defeat the Iranians if we could do it. I don't think we can, because, you know, we'd have to project this power. Again, Curly, you know this. You know what it means to, you know, put a division on the ground, and every kilometer forward complicates your logistic sustainability, your ability to maintain. You know, tanks just don't keep driving. They break down. They need to be repaired. Engines need to be overhauled. Where do you do that in combat? You know, there's a whole system that has to go in. It's not just about putting boots on the ground with guns. You got to put things on the ground. You got to put fuel. You got to put all the stuff that makes stuff work. And that means you have to have planned it. It has to be there ready. And you have to have a plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D, because my God, if that LST comes in with your stuff that you're going to use and it gets hit and blows up, you better have that spare LST coming in with the spare equipment, because that's what you need to win this war. We don't have any of that going on right now. This is a tragic joke. The only good news is I can't believe there's a military commander out there would execute any of the orders people are talking about right now. I just want people, again, I love my Marines. God, I'm very proud of being a Marine, and I'm proud of the Marines that are out there. But in May of 1975, the Cambodians, the Khmer Rouge, captured the Mayaguez. It took American sailors prisoner, took them off the ship. We thought they took them to this little island called Koh Tang Island. And so the decision was to take a Marine battalion landing team and assault the island and get these guys taken care of. Why not? We're America. It's just the Khmer Rouge. What the hell can they do? You know, intelligence says there's 30 to 50 of them. So we brought in the Marines, 11 helicopters in the first wave. Three of them were shot down, killed a whole bunch of Marines and Air Force guys. Of the eight remaining, five were so badly damaged they had to flee, some of them unable to dislodge their Marines. So we're down to three helicopters now, and we have Marines on an island, not insufficient numbers, because that's what happens if you don't get the full complement in. Now you have Marines there who are in danger of being overrun, because there was 300 to 500 Khmer Rouge heavily dug in, knowing what they were doing. And we ended up in a day-long battle that we lost. We lost the Battle of Koh Tang Island. We had to withdraw, leaving our dead on the ground. Worse, we left three Marines. An M60 team on the left flank was left. Three Marines were abandoned by the Marines there because we left in a panic. and they were captured and executed by the Khmer Rouge. That's what will happen if we go into Karg Island or any other place. We don't have the forces to do this.
You mentioned something we're talking so many things here about the leaders and putting troops in positions where they can not succeed, as you say, because they're not having the resource or the plan. There was a comment, I'd like your viewpoint on it this morning. You said a second ago, one other thing I think is also much more important than people recognize, and that's having a just cause to fight for, not just because you're told to or because of something else fake. And this is what I believe, I'd like your view specifically. This is from Secretary Hegseth this morning, where he's trying to give the justification to the troops as to why they should fight. Tell me, as a former combat soldier yourself, is this going to make you want to fight more?
As far as President Trump and boots on the ground, I don't understand why the base, which they have already, they understand, wouldn't have faith in his ability to execute on this. Look at his track record of pursuing peace through strength, America first outcomes. What he's simply saying, and it's exactly true, and I've said from this podium too, we're not going to foreclose any option. You can't fight and win a war if you tell your adversary what you are willing to do or what you are not willing to do, to include boots on the ground. Our adversary right now thinks there are 15 different ways we could come at them with boots on the ground. And guess what? There are. Not do. So, but if anybody has internalized the lessons of Iraq and Afghanistan as the first one, President Trump, to call them out for what they are, he's not going to repeat those lessons.
And sorry, about right after that, one of the other soundbites was, he said, listen, these guys know they're fighting for their future. They're fighting to make sure there are no weapons of mass destruction, no nuclear weapons ever come in. They're fighting for their children. That's what he said today. Do you think that was resonating well with the troops?
I don't know. Lance Corporal Schmuckatelli back in the day, he just cared about, Lance Corporal Rodriguez and Lance Corporal Smith to his left and his right. He cared about, not dishonoring the Marine Corps. He cared about being able to execute his mission called upon. He was worried about whether or not how he'd respond under fire. His corporal and his sergeant likewise worried about the tactical mission in front of them. The lieutenants were as well. I don't think they spent too much time worrying about the grander, geopolitical consequences of what they're doing or what's right and wrong. There's no right and wrong in combat. There's life and death. Your job is to do what you're told to do and trust that your leadership is making the right decisions. Trust that your leadership has done its job. Trust that there's a plan, that when you're going in there, there's a plan to back you up. And that works. So those Marines will fight. But you know what will happen, Colonel, when there comes a point where they're on the ground and it suddenly becomes clear that they've been betrayed, that there is no plan, and that there is no, nobody's coming to save them, that this has gone to hell in a handbasket, and that suddenly they realize, wait a minute, we're invading another country for no reason. The morale will plummet. This happened in Vietnam. I wasn't in Vietnam, but I understand, the first people that went into Vietnam were true believers. My father was a true believer. He deployed in Vietnam in 1966, early on, Air Force. But he believed in the mission. He believed that we were doing the right thing. But look at the people that came out in, 1970, after Tet. They didn't believe it anymore. They lost faith. They realized that we were not the good guys in this fight. We were the bad guys. And the total collapse morale took us a decade to rebuild the military after that because everybody lost faith. The military today, we have the internet, we have all this. I think that there are people now that realize that we're not the good guys here. Now those Marines on there on the Tripoli and on the other ships, they're training, they're practicing, they're getting ready, they're steeling themselves for combat. But I think they if it goes in and they execute it, great. But when the first wave of Ospreys come in and four of them on the ground, all those Marines are dead. The other Marines are on the ground and they didn't get the logistics that was in the fifth Osprey. They had to turn around and they're under fire right now. They're running out of ammunition. Right about that time, it's going to hit them that we're the bad guys and we're losing. There's not going to be this, let's die for God, country, and America. It's going to be, ask the people in Iraq near the end. Did they believe in the mission? No. They were deployed there. They didn't believe in the mission because they knew that the mission was a lie. Right now,
I can just add to that. I went into during the surge of the Afghanistan war. And so I was there 2010, 2011. And I was my job required me to go down to the tactical level and see what was happening at the tip of the spear on all these different combat brigades. And everybody that I talked to, which was anywhere from captains, lieutenants, and battalion commanders primarily, all the guys on the ground said, we have no idea why we're even standing here. All we're doing is doing the tactical mission because that's what we're told to do. But the orders from above make no sense because this is not accomplishing anything. So they, at that point, and tying to your point a second ago, we're just fighting for each other to make sure they could all come home, but they realized that the mission itself was unsolvable.
Yeah, that's where we're at right now. I mean, look, there's no doubt in my mind that American fighting men and women will acquit themselves well when the time comes in terms of their initial tactical proficiency. They're very highly trained. The problem is we don't have a plan. I mean, this is the ultimate betrayal. We've got these great young Americans who are willing to give their lives for their country, willing to. They don't want to, but they're willing to, and they will do what we ask them to do. But it's the ultimate betrayal when we don't have a plan, when we haven't thought this thing through, when we send them forward into harm's way and they start dying, getting wounded, and there's no plan. And then you find out there's not just no plan, but there's no legitimacy to your actions. Colonel, you know this. You know that war, it breaks people. I mean, some people are strong and we can put forward a good face and all that stuff. But anybody who's been there, done that, and got the T-shirt, wakes up in the morning troubled by demons, troubled by the devil, because war requires you to do things that aren't normal. It's not natural. It's one thing to train for. It's another thing to actually do it. People can deal with the consequences of war when they look in the mirror and they say, I was fighting for a just cause. My comrades to my left and my right died. I'm very unhappy they died, but it was for a just cause. It was a sacrifice worthy of the loss. I can wrestle with these demons, but I can get through the day because I'm convinced that had I not done what I did, evil would have prevailed. But what happens when you look in the mirror and you say, everything was a lie? These guys died for no reason. I killed women and children for no reason. You know, I did horrible things for no reason, no justification. You know, and then you're broken. That's when the spirit's broken. That's why we got so many veterans committing suicide every day, because they've lost their way. Because the wars we asked them to fight for 20 years, for two decades, were not just wars. Invading, occupying Iraq was not just. Invading, occupying Afghanistan was not just. You know, and the way we behaved there, kicking down the doors of Iraqi civilians who just wanted to live. They weren't Saddam Hussein. They just wanted to live. They were at their home. You know, imagine somebody coming to your street, kicking down the doors of your neighbors while their kids are at home, pulling them out, making them sit there and cry. And if, you know, little Johnny Tucker was a little slow coming down the stairs, you shot and killed him in front of his family. The father jumped up because you shot his son and you killed him. The mother screamed, "Your butt stroker." Now you've killed an entire family. For what? For what? An Afghan wedding party. Put a bomb on them. We killed 75. For what? And we did this over and over and over and over again for decades straight. And this is what's happening here. The guys that are fighting this war right now, someday these pilots, they're high-fiving each other. They're going to be puking their guts out in the toilet when they realize what they've done, what they're responsible for. And where's America going to go? You got that yellow bumper sticker on the back of your car? Go to hell. Because you got a yellow bumper sticker on the back of the car, then go to the VA and change out the colostomy bag of some 30-year-old kid who lost his bowels when he was 19. Go find, you know, everybody loves the soldiers. You know, hey, you look good in uniform. You know, girls, hey, I want to marry you. You know, marry him. They go off to war. They come back and they're screwed up, man. They got hit with one too many IEDs. Their brain's a little rattled. And he's not the man that you married now. And you abandon him. Now he feels the abandonment. And maybe he's hurt and he starts doing drugs and he's on the street homeless. I drove an ambulance for my fire department for a long time. We picked up homeless veterans all the time and took them to the VA. Abandoned by a society that claimed that we support our veterans. No, we don't. And the best way to support a veteran is to make sure we don't send them to an unjust war.
Now, I don't know about you, if you're still with me, but I found that clip particularly powerful, very evocative, very emotional for me, because I have deep empathy for everything that was expressed in that clip. And these are military veterans, so I guess you can believe them if you don't want to believe me. I'm too much of a pleb to actually analyze these things. Stay in your lane, Frank. Analyze politics, which I'm not qualified to analyze either. Another thing that Trump said yesterday, he signaled to the world that not a single person will be left behind, that the American military always gets its people back. Another prediction I will make is if they proceed with this ground invasion and they proceed with escalation and they go ahead with it, there will be people left behind in the mountains of Iran. I'm Frank Vaughn. I hope this isn't the last day that you get to enjoy peace.